Welcome back to Money Life, where one of the things we've been trying to do a little bit more on the show is make sure that we can do some deep dives on certain industries, get you sector experts where we really can dig in and get a good take on what's happening in specific industries. And today, well, we're going to be talking oil, energy, and then also a little bit of finance, because my guest is Stan Major. He's portfolio manager at Hotchkiss and Wiley, HWCM.com, the website. I'll point out, it's been a long time getting Stan on the show. It was an audience request a while ago, and then we hoped we could arrange it, couldn't get it done. We finally have it done. So hopefully it lives up to the billing. But as always, if you like what you hear and you then hear somebody else doing other things, take advantage of it, because like Stan, we hope to get all the people you like on the show. Stan Major, I'm very happy to welcome you to Money Life.
Oh, it's great to be here.
Stan joins us on the Gainbridge Hotline. Gainbridge has embarked on a mission to create a digital platform that provides direct access to trusted annuity products without complexity or hidden fees. Learn more at gainbridge.life. Stan, let's jump in, because oil and energy have been this confounding thing for a lot of investors. I mean, I've disclosed on the show and in columns that I'm a shareholder in ExxonMobil, and every time I talk about it, half the people go, well, how can you still own big oil? Aren't you seeing what's happening? And the other half go, it'll come back. When you look at what's been going on and the evolution that we're going through, how much are things changing right now? And what do you see as the picture moving forward?
Sure, Chuck. So maybe if we take a step back, you know, what gets confounding is energy is a very complicated area to look at. But if you take a step back, try to simplify things, I think it kind of puts the world of energy in perspective. And what would I mean by that? So if you think about oil, it's a commodity that is essential to the world economy. You can't live without it. You know, if we, for some reason, didn't have enough oil, you know, you really would see economic catastrophe, but also physical catastrophe. You know, if you think about it, if the weather's too cold and you can't heat your home, you know, you put lives at risk. So it's an essential commodity, which in, if you wanted to put it in economic terms, is it's an inelastic commodity. People that need it will pay a very high price for it. So what happens when you get shortages? And how did we get into the situation we're in? If you think about it, supply and demand are mismatched when you get a shortage. Let's take a step back to before COVID. Oil demand worldwide was about 100 million barrels a day. On the supply side, the thing that is unique about oil production is that it's a depleting business. If you don't spend money, production goes down. Think of it simplistically like a balloon. You blow a balloon up, it's got air in there, it's got pressure, the pressure comes out and it declines. An oil well is very similar. If you're not drilling more wells, production will fall from the existing wells. And so you've got this situation where if you thought about 2019, 100 million barrels a day of supply, let's take up a high number for capacity. Usually wells are producing full out, but there was some excess in OPEC. Say it was 105 million barrels a day, hypothetically. What happens over time is that if you don't spend money, that productive capacity declines. And so that 105, maybe the next year it's 104, 103. Today, maybe it's 102, 101. So we're seeing currently productive capacity and energy declining. We're just not spending enough money. On the other end of the equation, you know, we had, call it 100 million barrels a day of demand. COVID changed that. But if we were growing at 1% or so, it means that the underlying demand of the business or the industry would be maybe 101, 102. And so what we get is that supply declining, demand increasing, and tightness. And we see that in inventory. So if demand is greater than supply, inventories fall, and they've been falling. The real risk for the energy market is you've got this commodity, which people need, which the economy needs, which is inelastic, and you've got supply, which is continuing to fall, and demand, which is increasing. Historically, the resolution for that is in the 25 years I've been doing this has been straightforward. You get high prices, people will spend more money, so they'll grow the asset side of the business to increase production. They fund that through more debt, raising equity, generating earnings. And so you see the industry get bigger. It's the opposite today. Productive capacity is actually falling. Companies are not spending enough money. The money that they are generating, the cash flow, the free cash flow that they are generating, they're actually not growing the asset side of the balance sheet. They're shrinking the liability and equities side. So they're paying down debt. They're buying back stock. So you're really not seeing the response that I've seen for the last 25 years, which is high prices attract capital, low prices reduce capital. We're just not seeing the problem getting fixed.
As you don't see the problem getting fixed, how do you invest in that environment, especially when you have all the alternative energy things coming in around it and making it that, you know, there are indeed alternatives and changes?
Yeah. So to put that in perspective, the problem not getting fixed, the problem being high prices for consumers, for the companies that produce oil, it's great. You know, you're going to get very good prices. So if demand is increasing, which we think it will, even with alternatives, and supply is not increasing, you have a very tight market. And what will happen is you'll see prices stay where they are or go up, you know, as it gets tighter. And so the companies will generate a lot of free cash flow, and that is getting returned to shareholders. Alternative energy, you know, think of it as something that if it's successful, a lot of capital is going into it, but that takes a lot of time to solve the problem. So if you think about, you know, the math around electric vehicles, they're currently 3% or so of the fleet, auto sales each year. You know, even if that were to go to 10 or 20 or 30%, so multiples of where it is today, given that cars last 15 to 20 years, it just does not have a big impact on demand in the short run. In the longer run, it does have some impact, but it's not as big as people think. So you've got this long run solution, which doesn't have much of an impact in the short run, and some real short run issues.
That would seem to suggest that the folks who are saying it's coming back, be patient, are right.
Yes. Yes. So what we're seeing is, historically, what would the major oil companies do? They'd go drill. So they would spend money shooting seismic. Then they'd drill some exploration wells offshore. Then they would develop those if they were successful. And then 5 to 10 years from now, that offshore project would come on. Today, they're not even really considering that. So it means that, you know, in a business that's a commodity, it's a tight market.
Do you have an expectation? Are you willing to talk about an expectation for like where oil prices are going to get to, and how much of what you have to look through right now on oil is real versus transitory? In other words, how much of this is inflation and supply chain and whatever else, and will it stick around?
So if you think about that, energy is one of the areas of the market where there is not optimism. So if you look at the market, valuations are very high. When you go through, take the valuations of electric vehicle manufacturers, you have to believe in profitability that is probably unlikely. You can look at a $1 trillion valuation and say, okay, what would justify this? Probably $100 billion in earnings. What's the likelihood of that? Probably not likely, given the entire auto industry earns $100 billion. So there's optimism. There's bubbles wherever you look. You know, it's pretty clear that when you look at real estate in 2006, 2007, we thought of that as a bubble. Nominally, prices are higher than that today. So there's optimism in almost every asset class. I would say there's not in energy. So, you know, where could prices go? Prices could be very, very high. You have an inelastic commodity. You have supply decreasing and demand increasing. That could be very tight. But if you look at the valuations of the stocks in the energy industry, you can use actually a lower price. So if you look at $65 WTI instead of $80 WTI, WTI for your listeners is West Texas Intermediate. It's a benchmark oil price. If you use lower prices, significantly lower than where it is today, you know, these stocks are generating 15 to 20% free cash flow yields. And what is free cash flow? It's like earnings. So it's the cash you're generating from the business, less the cost that would take to replace all of your production. And you're generating a lot of money. So the interesting thing is you don't have to have optimism. You don't have to believe in a tight oil market. You just have to believe in an okay oil market to get very high amounts of cash back. To put it simplistically, what do I mean by that? If you think about earnings and what it means for investing, if you were to take a job, you'd want to know how much it earns. it's salary is and bonus and whatever you're going to get compensated is important for the investment of your time. But people forget that when they invest in the stock market. What does that mean? So if you put $1,000 into treasury bonds, you're going to get $17 a year, depending on where on the yield curve you invest. If you put it into a stock at 100 times earnings, you get even less than that. Something at 30 times earnings, you get $33 back. If you're investing in an energy company, an oil producer today with a 15 or 20% free cash flow yield, you're getting $150 to $200 a year on that $1,000 investment. And that's at prices lower than we are today. So that's the nice risk reward, is there really is just not a lot of optimism. The companies are even making it even better because they're saying, look, we're not getting this recognized in our stock. Our stocks are undervalued. We'll buy back stock for remaining shareholders. That's fantastic.
Quickly, because we're almost out of time, I pointed out that you work on both the energy and the financials team. Let's turn this to financials. I mean, we've got significant issues with inflation, interest rates where they're changing broadly and quickly. Optimistic or not so optimistic for what's about to happen with financials?
Broadly and quickly optimistic. So if you think about inflation, look, the bottlenecks in the economy, I'm sure, will be removed. They always have been. The issue is there's a lot of money in the system. A lot of money chasing too few goods is a longer-term problem. You're going to get some inflation. You'll probably get higher interest rates. You know, that's very good for banks.
So you put that all together. Well, that's the quick take there. And I wish we had more time because I have follow-up questions. I just don't have any more time to ask them. So we'll just have to have you back, Stan. Thanks so much for doing this.
All right.
I look forward to the next one.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
That's Stan Major. He's portfolio manager at Hotchkiss and Wiley. HWMIX, if you're looking for information on the fund that he runs, Hotchkiss and Wiley Midcap Value, but also hwcm.com for more information. Okay, I hope you are not burned out because, well, hey, if you're burned out on Money Life, you wouldn't stick through this next message and then come back when we're going to be talking with author Jennifer Moss about the burnout epidemic. And then later it'll be back to the market talk with Jack Ablin from Crescent Capital Management. This is Money Life.